Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Podcast. I'm Ross Carr with Bryn Gatlin. We would have used him on the weekend for a drop goal. Bryn Hall and James Parsons.
How good, lads? Man, how good.
It delivered.
Oh.
We were speaking last week about it bubbling. On the surface, and it was classic Winslow Cup footy.
That 9 minutes of overtime, man, how good. Jeez.
Oh, just going from end to end.
Yeah.
You didn't want it to end. Like, you wanted it to, you would have liked it if it was like Super Rugby and you get an extra time.
What I did like is Paul Williams just kept the whistle away, man.
Oh, he refed so well.
Kept it away, and there were some certain things you'd be like 50-50, but it was so good to see a ref that just let the boys play. And they dictate the result, not the ref. So, Paul, good on you, mate.
Yeah, it was nice. It was a nice flow to the game, wasn't it? And that's something that in a test match goes missing if the whistle comes out real early and it just turns into resets and, penalties and, kicking for territory. And it felt like a good flying rugby game.
Yeah, I think best example of that is Dungunu's try when it looked like Aussie knocked it on. When I was originally watching, I was Matt Phillips has knocked it on, but it was clearly stripped out by Damian McKenzie, and then, he went on to score, and he called that live, A lot of time you'd have to, go back about 4 or 5 times, but he had a great feel for the game, and it definitely allowed it to be the spectacle it was.
There were moments that got let go, I suppose, that either side might not have liked. There was the foot on the touchline, probably, from Rico. I think there was a guy coming in the side, maybe Tupou Vahi, towards the end, came in right in from the side and was really lucky that that wasn't a penalty. There were moments there which could have turned the game if a call had been made.
The one thing that was good, though, it was Agnes Gardner. He was on the side, so, it was his. You don't want to, obviously, a bit of words around Kiwi touch judge, but it was Australian touch judge, so... Kind of let that one go, man. It's one we got away with.
Well, let's go back to the start. Are you happy, first and foremost, with how the All Blacks played, both of you?
Yeah, I think they probably played a little bit too much in the second 40, maybe, like getting that balance of that sort of kicking game that we spoke about. I thought the Wallabies used their kicking game really well and sort of challenged us there. But I think for a team that hasn't been together in the first outing for both of them, it was exceptional, but the only, I suppose, glowing concern statistically is the number of turnovers conceded. I think, we had 39% ball and we gave it back to them 21 times, whereas, Wallabies had a lot of ball and only had, I think, 13 turnovers conceded, So that would be the only concern. I know it was wet weather, but, I mean, both sides were in the same conditions. I'd say that would be the only thing, but that's just, I suppose, not having that time together in the flow, because... You look at that first try, the skill set shown, McKenzie's pass to Goodhue. Goodhue taps it on, and then Frizzell sends it to Geordie on the wing there. So it was definitely a pass mark, but that for the level of the All Blacks, you take Sam Kane's emotion after the game, you can see that they're not happy with where they were at.
Yeah, Jeff said a lot of those points when it comes to the All Blacks. What I was impressed with was Australia. We talked about it a lot in that lead up probably the last couple of weeks around, what kind of style are they going to play in. To be honest, if it wasn't for a few defensive penalties from Sam Kane and a couple of the boys close to the line, that result could be very, very different in that first 20 minutes. We look at the phase play attack and their retention of ball. Nick White, when he was running around and the quick ball there from the service of the breakdown was tremendous. And we talked about it, I think, last time Nick White had a blind, it was in Perth. It was a very similar game. He was running around the rucks, causing havoc and getting those big ball carries around. So No doubt, I think I've heard messages around Dave Rennie after the game as well, and he's looking forward to the collision again. I thought they're a little bit off in certain moments. So if they can continue to win those collision moments, which, you know, they probably will coming forward, especially with it only being their first game together. So I thought Australia were really, really good. And to be honest, I thought they deserved to win it. We were pretty lucky in the end with the draw.
I love the way Rennie just straight away was like, we've got to be better at the breakdown. But yeah. That's probably the best the Wallabies
100%
have been at the breakdown for years. And he's just like, nah, got to be better.
Yeah.
He just loves the collision areas. He knows if you win the collision areas, you're going to win games of footy. Yeah. And I just thought it just shows where they're at. That, you know, like he made judgment. He goes, yeah, well, Wallabies had a big win last year, and then we got beaten by 36 points to nil the next week. You know, he's just on the job. He's like, it takes more than one 80-minute effort to say that he's, you know, he's changed things there. And you know, he's so aware of that and just so measured. I just love the way you know, he gets asked the question. He's just measured in everything he does. He doesn't try to overcomplicate it. He doesn't try and spin you a yarn. He just says a spade's a spade. And it shows in the way the Wallabies play.
That's what Australians are used to. You know, a spade a spade. He's almost the perfect bloke for them.
Well, you go from the complete opposite of Chicka.
Yeah. But how often do you not see it? Or, you know, like there's mind games or whatever. I just think I suppose I admire him from afar, you know, what he's done with the teams. But, you know, his personality is very likeable, I suppose, to both sides of the people in the Tasman.
We talked about the All Blacks game plan as well, Chip, around. We talked around their kicking game and how they might change it a little bit. And they did a lot of kicking off nine.
They did it. They definitely, is that Brad Moore? Because it definitely seemed there was a lot more contestables.
Yeah.
We didn't get, you know, George Bridge was, it's an area of his game that's a strength. Mm. And he probably didn't have as good a night as he'd like. But there was definitely a shift in tactic that maybe didn't stick with it.
I was just thinking around it, like, it'll be interesting to see, did the weather dictate that change of plan? Because again, when it is wet, and if you look at Brad and with the sign with the Crusaders, contestables was massive around that game plan. But the way I was really impressed with as well, because as you're right, George Bridge is great in the end, is chasing, but you know, the escorts that the Australians did around those contestables were world class. So it'll be interesting to see if they continue to have that contestable focus off nine, or with that dual pivot with Bodie and Richie, if they're going to be selected together again, whether that kicking changes again. So it'll be interesting.
What do you think that does to a guy like Richie when you play that much off nine in a game like that? You know, we got towards the end and there were times where he was floating in and around the ruck instead of being back in the pocket. You know, what do you think, is that, you know, a circumstance of that where he wasn't running the game and so he felt like he needed to go and get involved somewhere else? It was an odd performance from him.
Yeah, I saw that as well. I was like, what's he doing in there cleaning? I was hoping he was in the pocket 24/7 to snap that droppy. But yeah, I think there's definitely an adjustment to the way he plays for the Crusaders in an environment, you know, that's his, and you know, he runs it as his. And I think he's just finding his feet, isn't it? It's a hard jersey to own, and it doesn't matter how good you are, it does take time to get that, I suppose, confidence in the saddle. I don't think he was terrible though. I still think he had a good performance. But I just took from Aaron Smith's words after the game where he said we just played too much in the second 40, where to me it sounded like they probably went away from that tactical kicking plan that, you know, worked well for them in that first half. I know they didn't get the spoils, but they definitely gave the ball back to them and challenged the Aussies, I suppose, execution. But then, like I said before, because they played too much, their errors, so the 21 turnovers conceded, you know, in their own half, in their own territory, it gives the ball back to the Wallabies and puts them straight under pressure. So I'd say there'll be a bit more, if it's that tight, they'll go more to a territorial-based plan to get across the line this week at Eden Park.
I'll tell you what I did find interesting as well. I don't know if you would have seen it, but, man, David Rennie or the coaching staff for the Australians must have told, let's put Richie Mo'unga on the ground as many times as we can, because the amount of times he got hit off the ball, keep him on the ground physically. And we obviously saw those hits from Pasami and that kind of stuff. But any time they got an opportunity to get Richie on the ground, he was on the ground. So I don't know whether if there was a game plan going forward. I know there's been a lot of talks with that when coming to halfbacks. trying to stop the flow of the game. But man, there must have been a target on Richie's back because he was on the ground a lot of times in that game. I don't know if you saw that as well, Joe.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, and I mean, the one, I think, was it 9 minutes in on his ribs. It was a big old shot. And it's probably not foreign to him though. He probably gets that a little bit, but I think it was relentless, wasn't it? They stuck to their guns. And that's probably what, you know, I know it was a draw and everyone sort of thought the Wallabies should have won, but that's what probably kept them in the game and made people feel that, as they just had that game plan and they just kept doing it for 80 minutes. Yep. They didn't go away from it. You know, you were spoken about Nick Wyatt, his kicks were on point, you know, really challenging the back three. Mm. Where I think, you know, probably Bodie comes back in at 15 if his Achilles is right. For me, Caleb Clark has to be on the field. I mean, every time he touched the ball, it was like, I don't know how many defenders beaten, but it would be in double figures. And he didn't have that much time on the park. You know, he just looks a weapon, a threat with ball in hand.
And I'll tell you what I enjoyed about Caleb Clark as well, mate. I thought, look, he was outstanding. And the best thing for a young guy coming through, if you think about it in a scenario like that, you can kind of go out there thinking, oh, what can I do? What more can I do and to try and overplay him? But, mate, he didn't at all. He was so smart around his decision-making and holding on to the ball. There were times where he was beating defenders, could look for the offload, but took into consideration the kind of type of game it was, how tight it was, and made his decision-making under pressure was great. So, yeah, look, if there's a guy that deserves to be based not just on his North vs. South Super Rugby Aotearoa form, and mate, he comes on there in a pretty tough and hostile environment, not a normal flowing game, I thought he was outstanding.
You know a bit about Caleb Clark. Is he that level-headed all the time, is he?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. He comes from, you know, Ronnie's his old man. He's extremely well brought up. He's a smart man, and he's a young man, but he's a very smart man. I think the best example of how aware he was of the occasion and how tight the test was is every time he gets that ball on the left flank, he goes bang off his left, gets infield. Yep. Didn't want to be taken out. And that, for a young man on debut, to be thinking like that, then he comes off Aaron Smith's shoulder and he runs into three big boys and you think, oh, he's going to go back. And then he spins out and breaks two tackles and gets, you know, behind the gain line. And it's little efforts like that to me shows that he's on, you know, he's on the job. He's not playing with emotion. He's playing with a clear head.
Correct. Yeah, I agree.
It's quite a thing for a young guy like that.
Massive. But his I don't know what the Sevens program did, but ever since he's come back from that Sevens program, his skill set and his mindset is just so sharp. And I don't know if it is the Sevens. Maybe it's just maturing or whatever. But his ability under the high ball now, it's incredible. And that's why I think it's a skill set people have forgotten about with him. You know, like he is seriously good under the high ball, you know, with defusing bombs. If he gets good escorts, he's got catches the ball above his head, like AFL sort of style. And for a big man, sometimes people just think, oh, you know, that's not part of his game, but it's a massive part of his game.
Mate, we're there. I remember we did that much preview when we played you boys, mate, and we almost got to a point where I was like, let's just not kick it to Caleb Clark's side because he's just that good in the air.
But one really thinks it though, eh? Like, 100%. And then mate, until you watch it, you're like, holy heck, like...
Yep.
He's and they're not just good.
They're not just catches like that. They're catches in the air like that, full tip, and like wet as well. It's pretty impressive, mate.
He's in great form.
Yep.
So based on that, hand him the 11 jersey, basically. Straight up.
Yeah. And I don't see why. That's hard because Bridge is so good. Geordie was good yesterday. But I think he has to start. I just think he is in a. Just like last year when George came in for Rico, it was just purely based on the form thing, and he was just playing well at the time. Like, you just got to get him out there because he is in super touch.
Yeah, well, if you think about it as well, Jim, we've always had that, you know, if you think of the likes of, like, back in the day, and even Jules, you know, that power winger being in there. And look, again, they're both the contrast of styles, you know, Bridges
and
a little bit
different. And do you think we missed that yesterday? A little bit? Because if you look on the other side with Korobete and Dangunu, it's because that's the sort of style they, you know, Korobete admittedly was pretty quiet in the first half, but he came to life eventually. Yeah. But he's got a point of difference, doesn't he, Caleb Clark? He's great. He's a big body, but he's fast. He moves well, you know, like he's something that you know he could create something out of nothing. Mm. and win you test matches.
Well, if you look at how long he was on for, it was like 18, 20 minutes.
And not long.
And that's exactly right. The amount of
touches he had.
They touches, but then like you know, Jip, it's so much easier playing on front football. You're going over the advantage line, especially in conditions like that where, you know, a 2-3 meter carry, going over the advantage line, good place for them. You know, it sets up Nagy and it sets up all our forward runners and everything plays off that. So, look, mate, if you're worn on his performance, I know it was a short time, but, man, he's definitely got to be in the conversation come Eden Park. There's no doubt about it.
Rico was that guy. Now he's at 13. What did you guys make of Rico at 13?
I thought he was good. I was surprised he got subbed. That's what I said to the TV. I was like, shit, he's going off. I was like, oh. The knock on, he'll put his hand up and he'll never do it again. And it's not ideal to do it at test match level, but it's done. But I thought his general game, he did get checked a little bit defensively off that line out more where Kotabedi scored in the corner. He did get checked, but you watch, a lot of people are saying that you watch his work to get back out and he actually ends up getting to his man that Damon McKenzie or Geordie, I don't know what, needed to push earlier. But they didn't think he could get there, so they stayed off. And then, obviously, I thought McKenzie did a great job to tackle and nearly take him out. But it was, it wasn't just Rico on that. Like, I felt it was a connection okay. thing. Yes, he got checked, but he got back out. So, and because he's so quick, a defensive error, he has this ability that, because he's so fast, he can turn a bad defensive read and he saves it. Yep. But maybe just because they haven't played a lot together, that, you know, I think I'm pretty sure it was Damien. Damien didn't quite know that, you know, and he just waited a second, I would say, too long and couldn't see Rico was coming because they were backtracking. But I thought Rico was great. I really did. He's another one like Caleb. He's got a point of difference. He can change a game. And I know defensively our defense kept us in that game yesterday with 39% ball, but. And it was, I can see why Anton went on with Jack, and it's a real solid defensive wall there and you know, secure and you know, put us in a position, our defense put us in a position to win the test match. But I think Rico is good enough to be 80 minutes out there. And he showed touches, man. God, sometimes he makes rugby look easy, doesn't he? God.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, look, I thought, I think you've pretty much nailed those 2 points there, Jip. It's unfortunate for the try, you know, man. You know, 99 times out of 100, he's scoring a try like that. So it's just unfortunate that at test level, I know as well. You're not getting a try. So
what was that meme? So, did someone put up a meme of you the other day?
Oh, they did, mate. Seriously, it's just the gift that keeps on giving, though. Seriously, you know. And I know it's tough. You know, Rico might actually take the bit of heat off me now. So
which is
unfortunate. But no, look, mate. I thought he had some nice touches here and there, and we've got to think again. Is like, you know, him and Jack having worked a lot together as well. So it's that continuity. And, mate, you know, you talk about the great combinations that we've had in the past with Nonu and Smith and all those kind of combinations. It doesn't happen overnight. So, look, I think he's deserving of another start. And like you said, Jip, mate, his touches, and you can't substitute speed. You seriously can't substitute it. When you've got a guy like that who can, like you talked about defensively and been able to save his ass a little bit with his speed. But, mate, on attack, if you can get that guy on an out ball and been able to manipulate the defense where he's trying to get on the outside one-on-one, you know, 9 times out of 10 with the speed, he's just going to put people away or go there himself. So it'll be interesting because, you know, I thought Anton came on and played well, but, you know, I think Rico, for his form, and I thought he was pretty, you know, it was pretty good on the weekend. It was just unfortunate that incident's probably highlighted his performance, but I think he should be good. He should be going good moving forward.
What happens from a coach in that particular scenario? You know, does Ian Foster even bother mentioning it to him, or everyone just knows? He knows.
Do you want to know, Ross?
Ask me, mate.
Go on. Nah, to be honest, it's just one of those situations. It's more so, you know, again, the chances of that happening are pretty low, and, you know, it's a signature try. He does it all the time, and, you know, it might just be a little chat here and there, so, you don't really have to have. Would you say something?
I don't think you have to say anything.
He already knows. You already know as a player. You just want to try and get back in.
And there was 40. There was 40 more minutes of test footy to play. 100%. No one's going to go hard at him. Yeah. You know, you don't even. It's like when a hooker throws a knot straight. No one needs to say anything. It's like he knows.
The losing of the test match wasn't that. There were so many other things that lost that test match. So, yeah, definitely.
We were still in a position to win it if we just snapped a droppy.
Yeah, okay.
Let's get to that.
Let's go there. That's what everyone was talking about. What the hell from both sides? What the hell?
Well, interestingly enough, Dave Rennie afterwards said, we trained a drop kick. James O'Connor was in the pocket. And they go, would have you liked it? He goes, yes, I would have loved it. He himself said they'd prepared for it. Whereas Ian Foster said, you know, they hadn't, it's something they'd normally trained, but they hadn't. And I think that probably showed, did it not? Like, because you do need to know what's going on. And it was wet weather. You just sort of got, they'd gone 90 metres right at the line. And I think if you look back, even Sam Kane standing by the rucks there, he's standing right by the far post and he's pointing like that. And they scooped him in the knock on. And you can see him. He's going, get it back there and drop it. Like he looked like he knew what needed to happen in the wet conditions, because you're always chancing your arm.
I can imagine, it was talked about, because I think I saw Richie actually ended up getting into the pocket, and they actually went through that kind of process to be able to set it up. It's just unfortunate as well that, I can't remember who did the part, whether it was Hoskins. Unfortunately, if that pass is given, like a really good pass to that, I don't know who was on his outside who gave it to, Jordy, there's an overlap and we score a try. We're probably not having this conversation.
Yeah, but did we not have this conversation with Wellington last time in South Africa? Correct.
But that's the thing. You want to back what the pitcher is, correct? The low percentage play is to set up the drop goal. And, mate, I 100% agree the drop goal should have been taken. But if you want to talk around attacking as well, mate, that pass, if that's given, it's a try. You know, so it's that kind of percentage play. It's like, do you really want to go there? It's on. Because you want to back instincts as well. You back the All Blacks as well.
But see, to me, the higher percentage play was the drop goal.
Yeah.
Yep.
That to me is the higher percentage play.
A play where there is no defender that can mark you. You know, it's that simple. A guy can't be near him for 20 metres. You know, he can go back as far as the 22 and he's completely free. It seems insane.
Yeah. I was as frustrated last time we spoke about it with the test against South Africa in Wellington. It's no different for me here. Just take the 3 points and win the test.
And even
if he misses, it does. I'd rather them go for a drop goal and miss than keep doing these, what I think are 50-50 plays. Yeah, Hoskins, if it was a halfback, but it wasn't.
Mm.
You know, he could see that it was Hoskins at halfback.
Robbie. Okay, so there's two words.
Bring Gatland. Drop back in the pocket. Yeah, man, that could win. That's all he was talking about at training today.
He would have done four phases earlier.
Yeah.
He lives for those moments.
Oh, he would have, man. Yeah.
There's a couple of things you guys have mentioned which kind of come to mind here. One, with the drop goal and having the person with the presence of mind to want to take it. And two, you mentioned earlier about playing too much with the ball. Now, to me, the best player in the country at calling both of those things is Beauden Barrett.
Yeah.
Beauden Barrett's an exceptional player of knowing when to play with or without the ball, right? We missed him. It's pure and simple. He's got to be on the field at 10 or 15. He is so important to the side, especially when you look at the back three being relatively inexperienced.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be interested, is the door slightly ajar for him to get a crack at 10 now? Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to put you in that position, Bryn, because it's too hard, but I think he's got to be at, man, just watching the last four games when he moved to 10 for the Blues, it just changed. Honestly, the Highlanders game, when he was at 10, it just looked like he was going to create something every time he touched the ball. And he's experienced. He's had big press moments. He's been world player two times. Let's give him the general. Put him in the general seat. Run it. You run the cutter, big fella. You're that good. Give him a crack. I think he deserves a crack at 10. Like, he's proven to play really well at 10. People seem to have forgotten that. And it's like, Geordie's played extremely well at fullback all year. Let's just give it a crack. I don't know. He's probably going to be at 15. I'm wasting my time. But that's just, I just think, I love him at 10. I love him in that first receiver. And just defensively, it slows your defense. It's like an attacking kicking game. When there's rush defense, you put it in behind, it's going to make people think, well, when he's there, you rush him, you're going to create a hole, and he's good enough to get it right. If you stay off him, he's going to come flat and put someone, you know, like you, it makes you think so much more. And I'm not saying Richie doesn't have that ability. Richie's the best. He's the best first five at sitting behind a forward pod and splitting that gate between two defenders. When there's the three forwards and the short ball runner and the forward pops it out the back to Richie, there's no one better in the game than that play than Richie. Mm. So he's got strengths to his game as well. I'm not saying anything about him. I'm just saying, like, Bodie, I'd love to see him in 10. He's not going to be in 10, but it doesn't.
It's going
to
be, yeah, it is going to be interesting then, because he obviously we talks around this during the whole week, whether who should be at 10 or who should be at 15. It'll be interesting if they do go with that pivot role, and then, Gyps, with what you were talking around, with Rich, if he's selected at 10 and having those pods around, having the three forwards and then that out the back kind of play that most teams do play.
They don't seem to do it anymore, the All Blacks.
They run the two lines. Yeah, and so
and that's I think his it's biggest strength.
Yeah, so it's interesting because that was the kind of format that they had at the World Cup with the two runners. And the thing with around that is that, yep, if you can check having the two runners, that checks the heart defense, which is great. But then, like you said, Jip, the play isn't around that position we were talking around because those two guys are just getting flushed in behind and they're actually just not sitting them down at the moment. And that, like you said, coming back to Rich's running game.
Defensively, do you have to stop on them defensively? You don't really.
Well, it's unless you play them early in the game to check your defense. You play them early and it's like, sweet, and behind. Well, we've actually got to hold off and we've got to check them. Otherwise, I think, as you know, Jip, if those two runners aren't in sync and running well at that specific timing off a nine, then you just discount them and then you can end up bringing line speed outside that. So it must be a plan that the All Blacks are playing because they've tried it at the World Cup and they're obviously trying a little bit in the first test match.
Did you also see, to me, and I was having this chat on the couch, is it looks like, and I may be wrong, but just from what I saw yesterday, when they run hard and fast down lines, it always goes out the back. And then when they play them, they're flat-footed.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
They hit that wide guy and he's flat-footed and then does some... I think if they're going to do it, they've just got to consistently run that same thing. And then, you know, so then defensively, you don't know when they're getting a knot because it just looks like they push off them straight away and it just gives an extra number.
It happened a couple of times as well, is that if that next ruck off that out wider, if that pass goes in behind, then the unfortunate thing around is that we're actually playing half of the field. There were a lot of times where we actually couldn't get to the edge. And so we ended up coming back in the short side quite a lot because we played half of the field. So I know it's the first game and they'll probably get better with it through the duration of the Bledisloe series and the Rugby Championship. But it's interesting to see how, if they'll continue to keep going at that and how we can try and manipulate that heart defense a little bit better because we're just not getting the gains with those two guys running off our nines at the moment.
It's something that the All Blacks always do, right? They always try to push the boundary. They want to be the first team to go in the new direction and then everyone follows them. But for me, over the last 4 years, watching Steve Hansen's tactical decisions and selectorial decisions, I've always thought they've tried to be a little bit too clever. And a lot of teams have come at them with something simple and effective and being too much for them. And what I worry is that those ideas are carrying on. You know, with players playing out of position, with game plans that aren't simple, that aren't necessarily easy to follow, and doesn't necessarily give the players that you've got their best chance at doing the things they're best at. Does that worry you?
Not for the first test, because you can't change so much straight away. I think that change is going to happen slowly over time as the new coaches and Fozzie get an idea of each other and how they work and some ideas. I mean, I think you look at the way the Crusaders run their attack, and Bryn, you'll know obviously more, but Brad Moore had a lot to do with that. And I think we will slowly see. I mean, that line-out move was his. I mean, that the Crusaders have been doing that for, you know, Taylor to Bridge. They put red jerseys on them, it's the same play. You know, so I think slowly over time, do you feel in phase play you're going to see his fingerprints on it, Bryn, as well?
I think so. We've seen a bit of that fingerprint already if you talk around the kicking game. We talked about it previously at the World Cup. They didn't kick a lot off nine, and we talked about it as well that South Africa and English really got us in a vice, and they played that kind of contestable mindset of being able to squeeze teams. So you've seen the imprint there with Nuggie and with Nuggie kicking as well. So I can presume that it'll be a marrying of a relationship around, because obviously Fozzie's running the attack and that, and Brad will have his influence as well. So I thought they'll marry it up nicely. You know, I think we talked around having balance around our kicking game, and you've seen that we had a bit of balance with kicking off nine now. So I can only imagine through the duration of the competition that those things will get started and get imprinted through the competition.
Yeah. I don't think it's all doom and gloom. Like,
absolutely not.
Like, from the way I see it, I think a draw is a pretty good result with how little ball we had and not our usual standards of skill execution. We put ourselves in a position to win. Didn't quite get there. You know, we had the knock on before half time. Like, and we're talking, you know, the Wallabies are talking, that's the best performance they've shown in years, and they still didn't win. Do you know what I mean? So it just shows that I still think there's a more of a gap than people think. Like, the All Blacks have still got plenty to, they've got more to improve on. This is the scary thing for me, is they've got more to improve on from a 16-0 draw, whereas the Wallabies, I'd say they'd be pretty, they're going to focus on the breakdown, like Dave Rennie said, but they'd be pretty happy with the way they implemented their game plan. You could see the difference for me. I know Dave Rennie said, they're hurting in the shed and stuff, but Hooper's interview, Kane's interview, it was two different people.
But have gone through a very different journey over the last 4 years. I mean, Hooper's been through hell, hasn't he?
Oh, man, I was just going to say.
Yeah, it was his 100th.
And I was just going to say about Hooper, like, what a warrior. There were so many times we saw zoom ups of him, and his shoulder had a stinger, and just, was sore in that. But, man, like, we talked about captaincy obviously with Sam Kane and Michael Hooper with their selections have been captains in that. But you can see why the guy's a captain, man. I'm seeing that on telly. And if you're on the field seeing that when your captain's hurting, but he's next job focused and wanting to go to the next play. Both captains I thought were outstanding. But Joe, one thing I did want to bring up was it just shows our click attack. I know Rico, we didn't have many opportunities, but I think that's what one of the massive positives that we have, especially with New Zealand, is that, mate, all it takes is one moment. I know we didn't score for with Rico, but that difference, and I can imagine that we're talking a little bit around click attack, especially if it's dry as well, the more opportunities that we'll get around that opportunities to be able to play KBA, keeping the ball alive, and just punishing Australian teams in that.
That's what we spoke about, and we were probably sort of hoping to see a change in the Wallaby style is, if they got the ball back 21 times, how often did you see that fast, instinctive transition defense to attack? Whereas when it happened, like when there's a turnover, All Blacks aren't wanting the scrum. They're like, ball up, let's go. Whereas sometimes I think it's just a change in the guard for the Wallabies in their mindset is when they have these turnovers, they've got to think, let's go. I think Pete Samu does it really well. He's quite natural in it. But it's like, we got a turnover. Mm. Let's go to the scrum rather than that transition.
And you'd think, Jip, with the influence of Dave Rennie, that will grow.
It has to grow.
Yeah, because we know how important we talk about New Zealand rugby. Well,
he changed the game. And I know Wayne Smith was in there, but, around putting the ball down, picking it up, throwing it in quick, that was, the Chiefs. They just did all these innovative little things like that when they went through that period of winning it. It will come. It's just going to take time. Like, he's only been there for a couple of weeks. And I mean, we're nitpicking. It was one of the best tests, but that's what that's what we've got to do is point out where they can grow. But I'd say those are the two areas that, the Wallabies would be looking at, being a bit more instinctive and throwing a ball around because now they have seen them. Now the All Blacks have seen the style of play. and the weather might dictate. And then I think the All Blacks can probably get excited about the opportunity of what they can do off the back of turnovers and finish it off.
And, mate, just keep feeding Taniela Tupou and Ngunu. Just keep feeding them with ball in hand.
How good is Tupou?
Unbelievable. Oh, man. He's unbelievable in face play.
His game is just, like he's always had that ability. But for me, it's his set piece and his work off the ball to be in position and, you know, not just the highlight stuff. He's definitely, he's an absolute powerhouse, isn't he? He's going really well. Love to see Valentini get a start for the Wallabies. I think he'd have a lot to offer at six. Just a bigger body. Yeah.
We talked about as well, like Nick, we talked about it before, Jip. We talked around the 9 and 10 selection, having the 9, we thought maybe McDermott or Gordon. But, geez, Nick Watt, I thought he was fantastic.
Absolutely
fantastic on the weekend.
I'll put my hand up. I just hadn't seen, I suppose, enough of him at the Brumbies this year to think he could put in a shift like that. But
I can't imagine.
It's a great star she's running as well.
It is. I can't imagine the All Blacks giving him that same quality of ball. There'll be a lot of emphasis this week around the breakdown and slowing that ball down.
Oh, yeah.
And opportunities.
Absolutely. And I think a little bit more kick pressure maybe, a little bit of counter-ruck.
Yeah, there was missing from Fozzie around that aim.
Yeah, he just got it on a bit of a silver plate, those box kicks, and the breakdown wasn't pressured. And then maybe, would you say the All Blacks, he scored it as well? I suppose it was just skill set.
I thought what was tough around it is that it was just the elements of Wellington weather.
Oh, yeah.
Mate, we know is when you play in Wellington and on a day like that, you're just thinking, man, it's going to be, you don't know which way the wind's going, so... It might have been a direction, but as you know, in that Caketon, it's a whirlwind. And so there were times where you saw Damien misjudge it. And, you know, he's probably in a really good position. But the fact that the wind just blew it over the top, he's moving around. And I can imagine the elements probably won't be the same. And you probably see a little bit more execution when it comes to us winning that contestable game.
I want to chuck one out there. Just one to think on. Kira Ioane at 6.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well.
Not that Frizzell played poorly. I just think seeing him in a wide channel, I think attacking-wise, he's another one that's a point of difference and can do something special. I just think he's really showing a physical presence in his game this year and a hard-working attitude off the ball. I just feel like maybe he's just in the squad at the moment and people have sort of forgotten about the form he showed in the 6 jersey. Or potentially do we, you know, maybe Artie goes to 6 and Hoskin goes into the boot. Just think there needs to be some sort of spice in that trio from a carrying attacking skill set point of view.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they make some changes or they just give the 23 there another chance.
Well, normally that's what will happen is you'll use it as fire to keep the same guys in there.
Yeah, but I think you're right though, Jip. With Akita playing 6 the whole year, it won't be foreign to him, you know. So
I just think, I was just watching yesterday because Frizzell, great skills as well to set up Geordie's try. I just thought, man, I'd love to see Akira in some of those open channel opportunities, backing himself. Oof.
It does bring up an interesting point though, doesn't it? As a coach in a situation like this, in your first and second test matches, the message that you deliver to your players about the way that you're going to approach the rest of your tenure happens this week. Are you a dump a guy and give someone else a guy a crack after one defeat guy? Or are you a show loyalty, back your original decision and say, we just needed a little bit more time guy? It is quite a big message to pass this week.
Yeah, well, I think, as I said before, if you review it, it was just, we had too many errors. 21 errors is quite foreign to an All Black team, or turnovers conceded. So, you know, the game plan was there. The player, the personnel, you know, we're talking about just getting that extra, or someone's playing really well. You know, it's the team selection, I don't think, was the drawing of their game. Do you know what I mean? Like whether, you know, say Caleb started and he didn't and Kira was there. I'm just more saying that it was an execution thing rather than, I'd say, the way the coaches picked the team and the way they planned the week. It was just a skill execution. Would you agree, Bryn? Rather than like personnel being the problem, if that makes sense.
I completely agree. I think you won't be seeing 21 mistakes this coming weekend for the Bledisloe as well. And again, we've talked about it again with the conditions at Wellington. Look, they won't use that as an excuse, and they'll always have high standards around execution and nailing that. But so I reckon a flow-on effect from that. I don't think there's going to be many wholesome changes. I don't reckon there'll be a lot of changes. I think they'll traditionally a wounded All Blacks, even though we drew, they'll take it as a loss, and they'll be that hungry. We've talked around bubbling. There'll be a lot of bubblingness in that environment. So they won't, they'll get their prep right. They'll go through the due diligence around that. But I can imagine they'll be pretty roaring.
Can you imagine the first few collisions when you've got Dave Rennie going, "Nah, we weren't hard enough at the breakdown," and then you've got, I'd say, a skipper that looked ready to play again in his after-match interview, and Sam Kane. He just said warrior. He's got blood coming from everywhere. And he was, you could just see he was livid. And I think he'll be driving a seriously hard edge at that breakdown and leading the way, as he always does. He was exceptional yesterday, might I add. He's a warrior. We talk about Hooper. 23 tackles and just throwing his body, key turnovers.
Yep.
Now, that to me was an All Black skipper's performance from him. And I'm no doubt he's probably as hard on himself than anyone and won't give himself a rap. But I thought for his first outing, he was exceptional in leading the team around.
Yep.
Let's move on to our performance of the week. It's brought to you by Healthspan Elite. Healthspan Elite is the first sports nutrition partner of the All Blacks. For the last 5 years, the team has been supplementing their diet with Healthspan Elite products to support their health and aid performance. The range is specifically developed to provide trusted, batch-tested supplements, giving peace of mind that they are safe to take. Guys, start with you, Bryn. Who's your performance of the week, or what is your performance of the week?
Performance of in the game, or do you want to talk about Harbour for the next 10, 15 minutes? I was actually really... the performance of the week was the Australians. Now, we talked a lot of hype around how they were going to play, what were they going to be like. There were some individual performances. I thought Dinguna, we've talked about him as well. But for me personally, as a halfback, the performance of Nick White was second to none in tough conditions. And he showed a lot of versatility in his game when it came to running, his passing, and then his kicking game as well, as Jibba's alluded to as well with his execution of that. So, Nick White was bloody impressive for me, mate. So he's my moment of the week.
For me, I actually found this hard to pick. I've been thinking about it, and I was thinking, man, there's so many to pick from. But I suppose for the week, Dave Rennie. I think he's had to travel. He hasn't been in the environment, and he's put a game plan and personnel in place and given guys opportunities. And I would say first job is test. He'd be pretty happy. So I think Dave Rennie for the performance of the week for me.
It's solid. You can't go against that, can you?
No, I just think, man, it's probably underestimated how, you're always going to see a spike. I know people say it. You always see a spike when there's a change of coach, and he's straight away already thinking about, no, we've got it. 80 minutes won't make it. It's all those sorts of things that I'm like, that's why for me he got performance of the week. He's just, I like the cut of his jib. Yeah. And I like the adjustments he's making.
Joe, I think that you've talked about it, that messaging, his messaging to the group. I think we've seen a little bit in the past with Checker. Yeah. Obviously, very emotional when the Richter scale goes up and down. So, it's good for your media, Ross. Us in the media, mate. Obviously, good storylines.
Yeah.
But look, I think when you've got a coach that just has that just very level, calmness and, you talk around a great performance, if you're thinking about it, a bloody good performance against a good New Zealand team. And he's already talking around, we were good, but again, we need to back it up. Last time we did this, we lost by 30 points. So I guess having that accountability in that group, giving that mindset into the group and changing some certain things around behavioural attitudes, look, it's just going to grow for them. And look, what a great test match it's going to be at a sold-out Eden Park. So we're excited for the first one, Jip, but the second one's going to be even better, mate.
I'm really excited. I just want to quickly touch on that point because I think it's a key point around Rennie's prep going into this game. The fact that in the post-match press conference, he's like, we won in Perth and then 36-0 a week later in Albert. So that's how far, you know, he's gone back probably 2 years of footage and watched over and come in with an idea of where he can change, knowing the personnel. That's the in-depth work that, you know, you probably don't see from a coach like him, you know, like, well, the people wouldn't know what, you know, to know those facts and the statistics and to talk about it, you know, he's done his homework to make sure, you know, that's, I don't know, that if I was an Aussie Wallaby fan, I'd just be frothing. I'd be so excited.
Yep. He had a good feel for what Aussie rugby's strengths are. Like, we talked earlier about the amount of time and phase play that they were able to build and build and build and build. When I think about the great Aussie teams that I've watched over the years, they've been incredible at quick ball and multiple phases. And in the late 90s, outrageous amount of phases.
Yeah.
And if you can take the combative Dave Reddy style and combine it with that Aussie natural instinct, and he seems to have done that fairly well first up.
Well, I think that's his thing, is he doesn't want to be, I suppose, a Kiwi coach that tries to turn the Wallabies into a Kiwi rugby team, because that's not their way of playing the game. So I think he's smart enough to know that he's got to coach the little detail around the style that's going to fit the personnel. And that's what I think makes him a great coach, is he always coaches to the kettle he's got, rather than trying to coach to a way that he thinks was right. Yep. So that's why it makes so good. He's so flexible in his methods. But he keeps things simple as well.
I think we can't underestimate his time there when he went over to the Northern Hemisphere as well.
Mm.
You know, so yep, he had the New Zealand attacking brand that he's coached from Manawatu to the Chiefs. And then now he went overseas, and, you know, Northern Hemisphere rugby is a little bit more set piece orientated, and, you know, kicking off 9 and 10 a little bit more around percentage plays. And I don't think, like, we can't underestimate that time that he spent over there. He could to take a few little gold nuggets that he'd take from there and then implementing it into games, very specifically, if you think about the game on the weekend, wet, windy, very similar to Northern Hemisphere and conditions. So, you know, having that kind of understanding of, like, oh, they've been in very similar positions with a different cattle. And then we talk around with what you said, Chip, being able to understand that, what the cattle that you have, and I'm not trying to play one certain style that I have at the Chiefs. It might be different than it was when he was at Glasgow, and now different in the Wallabies. So, yeah, I completely agree on that, Chip, understanding his cattle that he has, and then being able to put a game plan that works to his strengths of the team that he's coaching.
And we touched on it earlier as well, the level-headed approach that he has. When I think of a lot of the top coaches in recent years, you know, whether it be Hansen or Checker or Eddie Jones, these guys who are almost front and center, like, they're almost bigger than their team in some ways. Dave Rennie's not that guy. He manages to be the go-to guy without being the guy who attracts headlines, without all of those things. And that must be great for a young group of players to kind of maybe have a better feel for what is required from them. You don't necessarily, when you're rebuilding, want to see some guy who's out there showboating in the press conferences and being the superstar of the side, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, he doesn't overpromise and underdeliver either. You know, like, he keeps his cards close to his chest and what he wants to achieve. But like we were saying earlier, when he gets asked a question, he answers it and he moves on. But he answers it in 2 or 3 words. He doesn't try to, be the headline. He just goes about his work. He's like a grafter, you know, like a grafting rugby player. You know, they just constantly work and probably don't get the reward. But they're the guy that hits, you know, 40 rucks, 50 rucks a game and makes 15 tackles. And, you know, sort of like a Matt Phillip, who I thought was a surprise package yesterday, the amount of carries he had. And, you know, you would have thought it would be going more to the Samos and the, and Tupou and that. But I thought he was a surprise package in the amount he carried and the effectiveness of how he carried. But that's the style of player that Dave Rennie likes, because it's just that grafter, and that's what he's like as well. He just wants to sit in the background, he does his work, and then he lets his work do the talking.
Yeah, well, if you think about in the time of the Chiefs, Chip, those kind of players, what was his name? Is the captain Clark?
Craig Clark.
Yeah, Craig Clark. You know, players like that. You know, if we're talking around grafting and guys that don't get the comp, that don't get the rewards or the headliners for doing, you know, scoring tries or having extract or anything like that. Guys that know what you're going to get, consistent understanding of what the team needs from you. And so I think, you know, Dave Rennie always has a great feel and selects those players pretty well, you know. And I think if you look at we talk about Checker, a guy that's really good on the opposite is Eddie Jones. Now, Eddie Jones has got a really good ability, and I think the positive thing you can, if you have a coach like that, it takes all the heat off the team. So if you've had a bad performance in the game, if you've got a coach that wants to take the heat, And I think, you know, Eddie Jones on the other side is probably a guy that pushes the boundaries where it's good, but then obviously can have its bad things around it. But yeah, I think having a demeanor coach like Dave, you know, makes it just easier for the boys as well.
Are we being, because we're talking him up so much, are we just being smart, you know, setting him up for a fall here? Because I think if he was listening to this, he'd just be like, oh my God, they're setting me up for failure. I've probably gone on about it too much, but it's exciting for where he can take the Wallabies, I think.
Yeah, well, Robbie Deans had that first up win against the All Blacks, didn't he? And then it was all downhill from there. So you kind of can't get carried away early on, can you? But, you know, with that in mind, what do we see happening this week?
I think the All Blacks will bounce back.
Yeah, I think, yeah, they're definitely...
We don't lose at Eden Park.
No, we don't. And, yeah, we don't lose at Eden Park. And I think whenever an All Black team loses or a draw, you take that draw as probably lost inside that group. You know, that prep will be a little bit deeper and accountability will be that much, you know, having those tough conversations, not only from coaches, but internally from the group as well. So I can't imagine losing it.
Can I credit as well Damian McKenzie's performance? Because it can go unnoted. A late change like that isn't easy to come in and perform.
Yep.
You know, like all those disruptions don't help. Like you can sort of overlook that and all those late disruptions and things like that, although they won't use it as an excuse. I just think I have to note, I thought his, you know, there was a few errors, but his performance was pretty solid for a guy that probably didn't expect to play during the week. How late was that pull out? Did he get actually run with the 15, or, you know, he wasn't even in the 23 and then he's gone straight into starting? Things like that you just sort of can overlook. And at test match level, I think it showed the quality of his preparation when he didn't think he was going to play to put in a performance like that.
Mm. It must have been late because Bodie played golf on Thursday. Yeah. So, you know, it must have been fairly late, that call up.
That's all I was thinking. I was like, well, if he's only done captain's run, say, or he just wouldn't have got there. And you know what it's like. You need those reps during the week, I reckon, Bryn, to really nail your performance.
Yeah.
So I just thought he had some really nice touches, especially that pass that set up Jordy Barrett's try. I mean, that he looked in on the outside and then just floated out the back to Jack Goodyear. He went well, I thought.
Yep. On that note, George Bridges' pass, I thought, was underrated. That looked like a difficult pass to me to set up Aaron Smith.
To be honest, mate, he never gives that pass anyway. So he's run it that many times for the Crusaders. Just doesn't want to give it. Usually just scores. So. It was a hell of a pass and great finish by Nuggie. Jeez, Jonah Lomu-esque from the little
nine,
man.
9v9.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you're Nick White as well, you're just gutted. I've talked about this on the show as well. Whenever you get a 9-9-9 and you lose that battle, man, it just hurts you that much more.
It's the most competitive. Like the personnel, there's no nine that's not like Orient's most competitive spot in rugby teams. You know, like they just will compete in anything.
Oh yeah,
I'm the Haka Nuggie's gonna have his eye on Nick White in the next Haka. He's gonna be like just staring straight at him the entire time.
Yeah, oh, it's gonna be. Oh, it sets it up so well for this week, I reckon. Sets it up well for the rugby championship as well.
Jeff, it's almost like, you know, we're advocates for obviously the All Blacks and wanting them to win in that. But if you think about just for the rugby of the Bledisloe to keep, you know, to keep it bubbling, I think it's a perfect result and a great start for
It'll be a perfect result as long as we win two of the next three and keep it. If it goes south, I won't be so happy.
Yeah.
It is fun having four of these tests in a row, isn't it? Like, it feels more like a Lions tour with four tests in a row to be able to kind of get that story going, you know, and by test four, who knows where we're going to be at.
Although I think the thing around that as well is that you actually can just start previewing. It's a lot easier to preview and review because you know the kind of cattle that you're going to go up against, and then, you know, those certain trends, you're going to be able to get them pretty quickly. You know, if you think about, you play South Africa or Argentina, you know, you go from week to week prepping different teams, but when you've got, you know, the teams that you can play consistently pretty frequently, it's a lot easier to understand their trends and then being able to try and manipulate and execute a little bit better.
But on that though, do you think this week, I don't know, sometimes when you have, you know, a high error count and you know, you don't quite nail your you know, your ruck speed and things like that, you almost just go, right, we're just going to nail ourselves. We're going to look after ourselves. They'll bring what they'll bring, but if we nail ourselves and we bring the right intent to every part of the game, you know, you almost back yourself and you go, we'll get the result. Because sometimes you can overanalyze a little bit.
I think so, exactly. And I think even we know Drip as well, you know, that first game, you know, there's a lot of ironing out and understanding, you know. So you can do that, you can do that much preseason training or training together, but it's not until you're actually out on the pitch and you actually get to be able to be in those scenarios game-wise that you actually, you know, get those learnings. So I can imagine the second game, they'll be better for it. And well, like we've talked about, we're picking an All Blacks win. So I can imagine they'll be roaring. But look, I think if Dave Rennie, you know, wouldn't have been favourites on the weekend, and you know they probably won't go again.
$7.50.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Head to head, not even 1-12. That was head to head.
Yeah. Yeah. So
a draw would have been 20. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but if you had big stones, you could have made a bit of dough.
Yeah.
Brent, you got the Saturday game. You're making it to the Test match on the Sunday.
Where are we? Where are we playing?
You're Wellington, mate. I'm commentating. We're in Wellington.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You coming down, boy, or are you just... Yeah,
flying down.
Oh, you are? Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, it's going to be... if we've seen the weather conditions, it's not supposed to be too great, so it'll be a tough one. But look, now, look, we're trying to build. We had a pretty good performance against Hawke's Bay, but again, we left a few opportunities out there. So we know that Wellington traditionally are always tough down there, and they're very similar. Had a couple of wins, had a couple of losses, so...
Get that box kick out, boy.
Yeah, well, that's it. We just have to wait and see. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. We've had, you know, we've got some good kickers in our team with Brendan Shooter at the moment. So, they might add a few box kicks here and there. Who knows? We'll just have to wait and see.
This should be a good weekend.
Yeah, it'll be a doozy. It'll be a doozy.
Yeah. There's some good matchups, though, in Mitre 10 Cup this week.
Every week.
Some good ones.
Yeah. Every week. It just delivers. It's a comp that just delivers. Like, that just brings excitement. That provincial pride is, you know, you can feel it, you know, and now everyone's back at level one, there'll be more people through the gate. Yep. But a test match atmosphere to, you know, end your weekend after watching plenty of Mitre 10 Cup, there's no better way, in my opinion.
Yep.
Auckland Tasman. That's a game.
Yeah, the Flatties are actually pretty excited for that match, actually. Auckland vs. Tassie.
Northland, Hawke's Bay.
Northland. Come on, the Tunnies.
The Tunnies are looking good, man. Tom Robinson, when he stays fit, oh, he's so good. He's just a workhorse. Top tackler of Mitre 10 Cup, Tom Robinson. Workhorse leading the charge.
So we've got the Cambridge Blues. Hoskins, Akita, Tom Robinson. Nice. You want anybody else? You want anybody else there, boy? Anybody else?
Look, Tom fits the bill perfectly, guys, because he can play six and lock, you know, so a great bench spot.
Oh, nice boy. Nice.
You sound like the kind of guy who puts together the Tasman squad. You know, let's take six international players and put them all at the same time.
I'm the accountant from Tasman. I'm running the books.
Absolutely. Oh, shit, man. Now, I'm looking forward to Auckland Tasman. That's an interesting game.
Yeah, what's the Flatties saying? Are they confident?
Yeah, they've been talking around, they've been scraping through and getting a few victories here and there. You know, they said they haven't been playing that great, but they've been doing enough to get the wins, which is important. So you'd rather win ugly than lose pretty. So they're pretty confident. I think, you know, big rig, he calls himself Jack Whedon, calls himself Big Rig, self-proclaimed nickname 6'6", 260 he calls himself. but they're excited. And I think Tasman bounced back really nicely against Bay of Plenty in tough conditions. So look, it's going to be a great game. It'll be a great game and definitely one to look forward to.
Battle of Bridge coming up. How's that going to be in the flat?
To be honest, it's going to be pretty quiet. We've already kind of talked around it. We're not going to be talking to each other each week. Not that week. We won't be saying anything. Dinner separately. We usually eat dinner together, but that week it'll be all separate. Me and Murph will be cooking for ourselves, and Big Rig and Scotty Scrafton will be cooking by themselves, hopefully outside in the rain, actually. So...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.